Welcome to the podcast of Grace Community Bible Church. We hope and pray that you are blessed, challenged, and inspired by this message. For other sermons or more information, visit us at gracebiblechurch.org.au.
Saving Private Ryan was a 1998 film directed by Steven Spielberg and starring Tom Hanks. And it was set during the invasion of Normandy in June of 1944. During the first 23 minutes of that movie, the audience is confronted by one of the most horrific, brutal, realistic battle scenes ever depicted. It shows the landing of the American troops on Omaha Beach amidst a murderous machine gun fire coming down from the cliffs above and from the bunkers that surrounded that region. And the challenge facing the American soldiers at that time was not only how to overcome that defensive wall, but how to hold the beach and then be able to move off the beach and move inland as part of the Allied Liberation Force going in to set Europe free. Some 3,000 years or so before that occasion, another army faced a heavy wall of defense, a wall of defense against land that they were called upon to occupy. And once again, the challenge facing this group was overwhelming. But there was no going back, there was no going around, there was no alternative. Jericho had to be taken. Now, the standard method of warfare at that time was known as siege warfare. The invading army either had the option of trying to break down the defensive walls or to enact a siege, cutting off supplies to that city or to that town for maybe something like 2 or 3 years if necessary, creating famine conditions within the city and thus weakening the population, and then using whatever engines of war they had available to break into that city. But Israel had neither the experience of siege warfare or the engines of war. And therefore, the challenge of taking Jericho was confronting. For Joshua, the way ahead looked daunting. He knew too well the strength of the enemy. He knew too well what awaited in the promised land, because he had been there 40 years before. He had seen the giants. He knew the walled cities. But 40 years before with Caleb, they had boldly proclaimed that God, their God, was able to give them that land. But if you remember your biblical history, the other spies were full of fear. And the result was 40 years of wilderness wanderings. But Joshua was a seasoned and responsible commander. And here at this point of time, he too had sent out his spies, recorded for us in the second chapter of Joshua. And he had gleaned the information that they had gathered, which had brought a certain amount of encouragement to him. So here we may picture, here is this man of faith facing a future, a very difficult future, almost an impossible future. He's gathering the facts together. The reality is there. How is he going to move ahead? How is he going to take this people with him into the promised land? And here we are, if I might put it in terms of Joshua and that movie. Here we are on the beaches of 2019. We've already landed. The year has begun. But how are we going to move ahead? How are we going to conquer those difficulties that we know are waiting for us? How are we going to handle those things which are yet unknown to us? As we turn to Joshua chapter 5 and that portion that was read in our hearing just a little while ago, I want you to notice with me that there is a vision to behold. There is a voice to be heard, and there is a victory to be had. There is a vision to behold. Here in this 13th verse of Joshua chapter 5, we read these words that when Joshua was by Jericho, he lifted up his eyes and looked, and behold, a man. Here he is by Jericho. Here he is doing the realistic thing. Here he is using the mind that God has given to him. He is out looking, examining, searching for a way to get into and to take the city. He's examining what's before him. He's responsible. Here he is sensibly, logically doing the right thing. But it would seem from the terms employed here and the words that we have in the text that as he has looked at the enormity of what confronted him, as he looked at the difficulties that raised up ahead of him, he was downcast. We know something of that, don't we, at times? Our heads hang low. Our eyes are looking down. It just seems too big. It seems too great. It seems too difficult. It seems impossible. How in the world are we going to cope? How in the world are we going to get through this? How in the world are we going to find a way? He's by Jericho. But then it says he lifted up his eyes. And what did he see? He saw a man. Oh, not just any man. For given the title used by this man and the command given by this man and the holiness produced by this man and the name employed by this man in chapter 6 and verse 2, this man is the one pointed out by Pilate, who declared, "Behold the man." Here is the pre-incarnate Jesus, our Joshua of the New Testament. And he is the one who comes now to Joshua. He is the one who came once to Abraham at Mamre. He is the one who came to Jacob at Bethel. He is the one who came to Moses at the burning bush. He is the one who came as the babe at Bethlehem. He is the one who came to Calvary as a sacrifice. This is the one who now comes to Joshua. And the great news for us is this, that one who came continues to come to his people by his Spirit. He continues to come to those who are feeling their weakness and know their inadequacy. He is the one who still comes to us, assuring us that I will never leave you, and no wise will I ever forsake you. This man who came still comes. This man is the one who comes, and he is also the one who commands. For who is he? The 14th verse. I am the commander of the army of the Lord. That is, I am the God who leads the armies of heaven. You see, while Joshua looked up and saw this warrior Christ, what he failed to see was the mighty host of heaven's army behind him. That though he saw this figure of a man behind this warrior Christ, was the invisible armies of heaven itself. And I wonder if you believe in the invisible. Well, let me put it like this. Do you believe in angels? Do you believe in angels? Oh, I don't necessarily mean, you know, those figures that we see with wings and with harps and floating on clouds. But do we believe that God has his angels that he sends to secure and to guide his people? In 1989, I was flying back from Kiev in the Ukraine to Moscow with two other believers. It was a late night flight, and we got into Moscow airport around midnight, and the airport was pretty well deserted. And unfortunately, it appeared that we were having trouble with our passports or with our visas, and not one of us, the three of us, spoke Russian. And we were becoming increasingly agitated about what seemed to be happening concerning us by the security guards and the soldiers. But then very suddenly, a very well-dressed man appeared who spoke perfect English and, it would seem, perfect Russian. For within a very short period of time, he had us ushered through security, through immigration, and through customs. And then he went outside to find us a taxi, which he did very successfully. And when we got to the taxi and loaded our baggage in and turned around to thank him, he wasn't there. He wasn't there. We couldn't find him. He had just disappeared. He had just disappeared. Vanished. Oh, if I may use the words of a chorus, I believe there are angels among us, sent down to us from somewhere up above. They come to you and me in our darkest hour to show us how to live, to teach us how to give, and to guide us with the light of love. Who's this man? He comes to his people. He comes as the commander of the Lord's armies. And you'll notice, thirdly, he comes as one who confronts our enemies. Because notice, he is standing with an unsheathed sword in his hand. He has come prepared for battle. He has come in order to fight for us, because as the New Testament brings out, we are to be strong in His strength, the strength of His might, not ours, records the apostle. And beloved, this year, we, the people of God, will stand this year because this man stands with us and for us. And he includes the fact that he holds us in one of his hands, and in the other hand, he holds a sword drawn for our protection and for our deliverance. This was the vision that captivated Joshua and comforted Joshua. And this is the vision that was endorsed as the writer to the Hebrews wrote to that group of people who were being called upon to suffer for their faith. Who, as you read that particular letter, you see that the secret police had come and arrested some. The removalist van had come to take away some of their goods. But they were told, they were exhorted, they were encouraged to don't give up, but run the race. Keep on running the race. How? Looking unto Jesus. Looking unto Jesus. Fix your eyes upon Him. The way ahead was filled with increasing uncertainty, and yet here is the exhortation. Don't give up. Don't turn back. Keep running. Keep moving. Looking to this man. And my friends, what will keep our heads above the waves of discouragement and despondency and despair this year will be this. Fixing our eyes on the Jesus that we see in the Scriptures, and knowing this, that though at times He may hide Himself, He always sees us. He's always looking at us. The very hairs of our head are counted by Him. You see, isn't it exciting to recognize that this man knew exactly where Joshua was and what he was facing and what he needed. And he knows exactly the same things concerning you and concerning me. His eye is on the sparrow. And so I know he cares for me. There's a vision for us to behold, the vision of a man who comes, the vision of a man who is the commander of the armies of heaven, and the vision of the man who confronts our enemies and fights for us. A vision to behold. But then notice, secondly, there is a voice to be heard. Now, there are many voices in our world today, are there not? The voice of the ad man, the voice of the politician, the voice of the expert, the voice of the educator, the voice of compromise, the voice of despair, the voice of darkness. And I wonder who it is that you're listening to. Which voice are you following? Which voice are you believing? Joshua sees this figure. And with boldness and with bravery, this Joshua comes to this one and challenges this man. Because you notice again in verse 13, when Joshua was by Jericho, he lifted up his eyes and looked, and behold, a man was standing before him with his drawn sword in his hand. And Joshua went to him and said to him, "Are you for us or for our adversaries?" What's Joshua saying here? Oh, it's the old military expression. It's the old military challenge. Behold, are you friend or foe? Are you friend or foe? What was the answer? Here is the voice of revelation. Verse 14, "And he said, 'No, but I am the commander of the army of the Lord. Now I have come.' And Joshua fell on his face." Now Joshua himself, of course, was a soldier. He was a leader. Here is a man chosen by God and sent by God to lead his people into the land of promise. And here he is surveying the scene and pondering what seemed to be impossible. We can surely imagine Joshua's thinking at this time, as you know, how in the world are we going to take this walled city? What is God going to do to us and through us to make this possible? But Joshua needs to learn something here. Or he knows something about the walk of faith, but he needs to learn something more about the way of faith. What do I mean? The response from this commander, that little surprising to us probably, that little word, no. How he responds to Joshua's query, are you friend or foe? He says, no. And in that one word, there is contained a lesson all God's children need to learn. For how often we ponder and we ask how God is going to enable us to undertake a certain task, or how God is going to bless this or that, or we're going to attempt this for God, we're going to do that for God, and we make our plans for God, and we wonder how God's blessing is going to rest upon them, how God is going to work through them. Because as godly people, surely we seek the blessings from above. But my friends, the lesson here is this. The revelation is this. The question is not so much, how will God fit into our plans and our schemes, but rather, how will we fit into His plans and His program for us? How are we to fit into God's purposes for us? Here is the voice of revelation. And Joshua understood it. He saw the implication of the commander's response. Because you look at him here in this 14th verse, in the second half of this verse. What do we read? And Joshua fell on his face to the earth and worshipped and said to him, what does my Lord say to his servant? No longer my will be done, but now, O commander, O Jesus, thy will be done. And so the voice of revelation gives way to the voice of recognition. Verse 15, and the commander of the Lord's army said to Joshua, take off your sandals from your feet, for the place where you are standing is holy. And Joshua did so. I'm sure that some of you here this morning know that old spiritual. You may have sung it as a child. Joshua fit the battle of Jericho. It's a great rousing song that brought hope to many of those slaves who worked under the hot burning sun in the cotton fields of the south. But you see, in truth, there was no battle of Jericho. There was no battle of Jericho. The walls just came tumbling down. And yet in saying that, I would hasten to add that if there was a battle for Jericho, here is where it was fought and won. With Joshua on his face before this glorious being, this man. Here is the winning attitude. What does my Lord say unto his servant? Here, you see, is victory ground. Take off your sandals, for this place is holy. And here is where the battle was won, and Joshua did so. Jericho was as good as fallen when Joshua fell on his face before this man. A willing and ready submission to the will and worship of God. That is the way forward, my friends. And here is how we get off the beachhead and move onto higher ground. A sense of wonder at our commander. A sense of and a sign of willingness and readiness to fit into God's plan for us. And a submission to the sacred. You see, this year, my friends, before we engage in any service for the High King of Heaven, we need to search our own hearts and see whose voices are we listening to? Whose voice are we submitting to? For submission always precedes service. For Jesus does not come as some crutch to help us get what we want. He doesn't come as our helper to get what we want or to get by. He's not some added extra simply to our lives. He comes as our commander who demands our total allegiance and obedience. We do not come to Jesus and say to him, "Are you for us?" He comes to us and he says to us, "Are you unreservedly for me?" You see, Joshua had asked the wrong question. It's not a you for us. Here we've been confronted with the High King of Heaven who says to you this morning and to me this morning, "Are you for me? Are you about my program? Are you about my purposes? Are you on your face declaring this attitude of heart? What does my Lord say to his servant? Have you heard that voice? Have you heard the voice of the commander say to you, no, it's not all about you. It's about me being Lord of your life. King of my life, I crown thee now. Thine shall the glory be." A vision to behold, a voice to be heard, and then thirdly, a victory to be had. You see, the victory was already the Lord's. Joshua had but to take it. And this he did, records the book of Hebrews, by faith. By faith, Hebrews 11 and verse 30. And so what do we see here but an evident faith? Chapter 6 of Joshua and verse 2, "And the Lord said to Joshua, See, I have given Jericho into your hand with its king and its mighty man of valor." And thus you go down to verse 7 and to the words of command, "Go forth." Go forward. And here, my friends, is the simplicity of faith. Trusting and obeying. Believing and behaving. For victory is in Jesus, looking to Him, leaning on Him, our weakness, but His strength. In January 1956, five young men set out to reach a very savage group of Indians, as they were called then, in the Ecuadorian rainforest. Before these five young missionaries went, they sung a hymn together. Let me read some of its words. We rest on Thee, our shield and our defender. We go not forth alone against the foe. Strong in Thy strength, safe in Thy keeping tender, we rest on Thee, and in Thy name we go. We go in faith, our own great weakness feeling, and needing more each day Thy grace to know, yet from our hearts a song of triumph pealing. We rest on Thee, and in Thy name we go. And so they went, but they didn't return. God had something far more glorious for them, the martyr's crown. And go forward is faith's command. So, my friends, I say to you this morning, don't allow your situation, however black or bleak it is, to control you. No matter how big or how high or how thick those walls that might be surrounding you may be this morning, no matter how savage the opposition might be, no matter how murderous the enemy's fire, remember this, it's our commander who holds the sword in His hand, and therefore faith in Him refuses to panic. Why should we panic? The God of the armies of heaven is for us, and He has His sword already drawn. And though we may weaken and falter and fall, beloved, hear His voice this morning. Hear His voice. I was nearly going to sing it, but I'm sure you'd know it. The steadfast love of the Lord never ceases. His mercies never come to an end. They are new every morning. New every morning. Great is Thy faithfulness, O Lord. An evident faith. We go forward because we're doing the will of our God. We move forward on our knees. An evident faith. And then you'll notice from verse 16 of the sixth chapter, it's an expectant faith. The Lord has given you the city. They expected to take it. And yet, let me say this to you. Sometimes He does give you the city. Sometimes He does cause the walls to fall down. Sometimes He does make a way in the wilderness. And sometimes He doesn't. Sometimes He doesn't. What do I mean? Beloved, faith is not magic. Faith is not simply saying the right words. Faith is not the power of positive thinking. Faith is not God's reward for us for being good or for getting it right. Expectant faith does see walls collapse and the lame walking and the blind seeing and the storms being stilled, but genuine expectant faith sees at times through tear-filled eyes and broken hearts and devastated dreams and crushed desires, and with trembling lips confesses, I expect a bright tomorrow when all will be well. Jericho's walls fell down. The city was taken. But you keep on reading that book of Hebrews. You keep on reading that hall of fame of the faithful, and what do you read? Others suffered mocking and flogging and wore chains. Some suffered imprisonment. Some were stoned. Some were torn in two. And let me add, five fit young bodies floating down that Ecuadorian river bearing large spears. What's expectant faith? My friends, it is the faith that goes right through the trial to God Himself and accepts what has happened to us and what has come to us as being from Him. Expectant faith is the fruit of submission, and it grows in the garden of worship. Expectant faith declares, though He slay me, yet will I trust in Him. And it is such faith, such victory, that issues in an exultant faith, where, like those who came to Jericho, we blow our trumpets of gladness and joy. And we dance with joy unspeakable and full of glory. And we move through this year with radical freedom because of the gospel of Christ. And we move through this year with infectious joy that enables us to be glad always. And we move through this year with a surprising faithfulness to God's Word. That 2019 becomes indeed a year of grace in your life and in my life. And where does it start? It starts right here at Jericho. It starts right here at this beachhead at the beginning of the year, where as we look forward and wonder how in the world we're going to cope or get through this year, we now lift up our eyes. We take our eyes off the enemy. We take our eyes off the solid bunkers. We take our eyes off the walls of opposition which create disharmony and dismay and disheartenment. We take our eyes off ourselves and our sin and our guilt, and we lift up our eyes and we see a man. Heaven's man. Our man. The man who's for us, standing beside us with a sword drawn in his hand. And all we can do is bow before this one and worship the King, all glorious above. A vision, a voice, a victory. May God grant it for His name's sake. Let's pray.